This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Sherman Jackson has an amazing book called Islam and the Problem of Black Suffering. Fantastic book. Even the intro of that book is like worth most of the books on your bookshelf. And in it, he talks about some of the structural differences between Islam and Christianity, especially at the ecclesiastical level, right? So the ecclesiastical level, meaning the polity, the church body. And if you look at these, they represent two different paradigms. Christianity was always a paradigm of totalitarianism, of top-down control, of enforcement. And so since the beginning, basically with the destruction of sort of the Jewish Christianity of the old church and James, you know, et cetera, once it went Paul and onwards and all the councils, et cetera, especially with the conversion of the Romans, it's extremely controlling, extremely top-down, and it's so significant to European history. Like that's their experience, right, with religion. But the problem is that conflation, right? So they take the experience that they had with Christianity and then scale that up to say, well, all religion is like this. Islam is a completely different history. And in fact, the history of Islamic sort of, first of all, we don't have an official clergy. We don't have a centralized system of ulama. It actually was public reason before there was public reason, which is quite amazing, honestly. How did fiqh opinions become normative? How did the madahib form? How did even a scholar attain to recognition as a luminary in their field? It was all through public reason, meaning that it was open access. It was informal. It was literally just, when we're talking about meritocracy, like full meritocracy and full social mobility. And if you could do it, you could do it. And you were recognized by your peers and all the other scholars and the masses as that guy's got it. And it was never able to be co-opted by government control. It was always exceeding the authority of the government figures. You had the, you know, very, very pinnacle moment of Imam Malik being approached by the Abbasid Caliph to make his madhab standardized and him refusing. Right, such an important moment. And then you have the only inquisition in our history from the Mu'tazila trying to impose it upon Imam Ahmed and, you know, the creation of the Quran, him resisting. All four of the fiqh imams spent time in jail, right? It's like this is a very, very different history than the ecclesiastical totalitarianism of Christianity. So that's what it is, honestly. And this is something that I go in more in detail with my paper on perennialism, specifically this conflation that Europeans historically make due to their own experience. They universalize that experience and they basically say, well, this is all religion or human nature, right? In reality, it was the consequences of sort of the way that the church was set up in particular to that, right? And it wasn't anything that was necessarily beyond that. We've never known that in our history, right? The closest analog you could find is like Qadi al-Qudha, but even then that's not really like the supreme judge, but that doesn't even really come close at all, because you still have these decentralized networks of ulama and muftis and, you know, legal scholars, the fuqaha, the jurists. It always exceeded and was unwieldy to government power. And if you want a good book that goes into this, part of it is Wa'al Halaq's Restating Orientalism. Goes into some of these things in a nice level of detail. It's not the main point of the book, but one or two of the chapters really goes deep into just how independent and how decentralized and how autonomous the scholarly class was throughout Islamic history until basically philosophical liberalism came along and then took over the Muslim countries and their organization.